Tonight, Tuesday evening at the Modern, Fall 2018 ends in a very big way. Some of you will recall that Lori Simmons opened Big Camera, Little Camera in conversation with the Modern senior curator, Andrea Carnes, who is also the curator of the current exhibition, for Tuesday evenings on October 9th. And tonight, she closes out our lecture series in conversation with her husband, the artist Carol Dunham. Further informing our experiences with Lori Simmons' Big Camera, Little Camera, before it closes on January 27th and travels to the MCA Chicago, as well as our thoughts on Carol Dunham's painting, Horse and Rider, My Ex, from 2013-2015, and the associated drawings, which the Modern is very fortunate to have in its permanent collection. If you're not familiar with that painting, you will be after tonight, and you will be seeking it out. Carol and Lori are incredibly gracious to return tonight to give us some insight into their individual work and practices as related to each other. Theirs is a demanding and devoted life, having raised two now grown children who are impressive in their own right, and negotiating separate and equally successful careers. When Lori was here for the Tuesday evening in October, you may recall me mentioning her feat of opening two major exhibitions in New York at the Salon 94 and Mary Boone Gallery on the same night. Well, in addition, Carol had a solo show at Gladstone Gallery at the same time, which, of course, was convenient for those of us who were in town to see the shows. But I can only imagine one household enduring that kind of pressure. And those of you who are artists know exactly what I mean. That said, they make it look easy, just another thing that they do. I could go on and on, but you are all already believers, and I think I might make them uncomfortable if I do so. So I will stop there. As for their resumes, they are packed with exhibitions across the globe, and both Lori and Carol are regularly in the news with interviews and reviews. Carol gave a lecture on his work last February, and as mentioned, Lori was here in October, so I won't lay out all their accolades again. Chances are you have come across them if you frequent art sites and or publications, as well as fashion magazines or the New York Times. I will just close with a quote from Art Forum on the work of Carol Dunham and a couple of other figurative painters that I think aptly captures what both Carol and Lori do. In his September 2018 article, Human Nature, Dan Nadell wrote, quote, "Attempting to render what it is to be human is an absurd task, which makes it all the more urgent." This seems to be a very good time to hear from these two artists, husband and wife. So if you would, please join me in welcoming Carol Dunham and Lori Simmons.
Thank you. Thank you, Terry, so much. It's great to be back. And in fact, we were here a month ago for the opening of my exhibition. It was 90 degrees, and there were Beto signs in all the yards, and I don't know where they went, but that's sad. Yeah. So here we are, and we've only lectured together about our work once before in 2010 in Aspen, Colorado, and at that time we said we would never do it again. But we decided to do a program together here tonight, and I didn't really want Carol to interview me, and I didn't really want to interview him. So the thing that's interesting about the way that this lecture is structured is that I haven't seen it. My studio manager, who's a painter, a brilliant painter named Mary Simpson, and Carol created this lecture together, so I'm going to be surprised. I have an idea about the basic structure. But the one thing that I did want to say is that so many people have asked us. We've been working not side by side, but in close proximity to each other for many, many years. And people always say, well, how do you do it? How do two artists live together? How come you don't kill each other? And we always say, well, our work is so different. We do such different things. I'm a photographer and a filmmaker. He's a painter. It feels like we inhabit not only different worlds, but our subject matter, our tools, our techniques, everything feels like it's about being separate. So to find comparisons or crossovers, that's always a surprise. And I have a feeling that's what you've done.
Well, the way that the pictures are organized is more or less chronologically simultaneous, something I made, something Laurie made. And I had wanted to keep the focus on more recent things because I think Laurie has talked at length and many things have been written about her early work and the kind of origin story of her work. Much less has been said, and Laurie said much less about her work from the last 10 years or so. So we made a series of juxtapositions starting in 2006, 2007, of something that seemed kind of central to what I was doing at the time and central to what Laurie was doing at the time. I think one of the great things about being with an artist for a long period of time is that not that many other people really understand the rhythm of life for an artist and the way you can appear. I mean, I know that my relatives have always thought I am a complete freeloader who does nothing for a living. Because it can certainly seem that one spends a lot of time doing nothing, but we do both work quite steadily, and it's impressive. I mean, I myself, seeing the Laurie Simmons exhibition, I think I know her work as well as anyone, and I'm kind of amazed by the range and the extent of it. And I think to myself, God, how did you actually do that? And then I realize, well, I did quite a bit too.
And yes, you did.
So to this question of chronology and relationships between the different studio practices of Dunham and Simmons, the whole inner and outer discourse of photography and of painting are very different. But we are generationally the same. We're born a month apart. We had a lot of the same formative influences, and the fact that Laurie was part of a group of artists who came to the idea of using a camera to make their art, and I was part of a group of artists that kind of didn't even know it was a group, actually, that thought painting had a lot of promise, that does seem to be quite a difference, but it's not as different as it might in some way appear. And I think that Laurie and I have both felt, looking back, that there are a lot more overlaps in our concerns than it appeared early on. Don't you think?
Yes. Well, it's striking to see these pictures next to your pictures, and also the pictures of mine that have been going by, the last three pictures are from a series called Color Pictures, and I finished making the film upstairs called The Music of Regret, where I felt like I said goodbye to all of my work from 1976 to 2006. It was kind of like a musical where I basically was done with everything because all my characters got up and started to sing and dance and walk away. So I felt, anyone who's ever made a film, I'm sure many of you know filmmakers, after you finish a film, you feel like you're going to die, basically, and that you will never make a film again or make any work again. So when I started to finally make work after finishing the film, it took a few years, I made these pictures called color pictures, naked women downloaded, you know, I kept thinking about them being in their birthday suits, being naked, free porn downloaded from the internet, put in rooms that were very neutral, that didn't have a nostalgic feel to them. And in 2007, I showed them to my art dealer at the time. I showed seven of them at an art fair. And she didn't want anything to do with them, and neither did anybody who saw them at the time. I think that when you're an artist, people can decide that they know who you are and they're comfortable with that. So when your work changes, it's difficult lots of times to take people, to take the so-called viewer along with you.
I thought they were very exciting.
Yes. And you did.
And have continued to speak up for them when Laurie's talking about work she made in the past.
But I wonder, I mean, this was around the time that, you know, seeing these together is very startling because you were, for, you know, when we got together, when we got married, you were an abstract painter for so many years. That's the way I described you. And suddenly things started to emerge in your paintings that were figurative. And I always, the little family joke is that I thought he started making figurative paintings because he thought that would make me more interested in his work. Because he knows that I love photography and figuration. And I think you were trying, I always thought you were trying to get my attention. But you really, some very strange things emerged in your work. And I never would have predicted the directions that you went in, particularly how anatomically graphic your work became.
No, I don't think, I mean, I've said often that I don't think the younger version of me could have imagined or probably countenanced the work that the older version of me is doing. But I think that the language, I mean, I did start my work thinking entirely about the history of so-called abstraction in modernist painting and wanting to continue that and thinking that it wasn't played out as a train of thought in culture. And Laurie started out taking pictures of stuff. But the language around these things is inadequate. I mean, we've discussed this for years, that so-called abstraction, it's hard to quite know what that means sometimes. Laurie's, one of the things that's very strong about Laurie's work that separates it from a lot of things that superficially share interests with her is her strong feeling about formal structure. And, you know, the subject matter in photography in a way seems to always be the point because photographs don't have surface and they're not made physically the way paintings are. But there's an enormous amount of, if you will, abstract thinking behind Laurie's work. And there was always a lot of hidden imagery, I think, or not hidden on purpose, but implicit, I guess I would say, implicit imagery in my work, which implicit subject matter, which has come forward more and more because I couldn't really hold it back. This was sort of to show the, I mean, this is an absolutely idiotic thing to say, but they're both green. And isn't that interesting?
Yeah. I think you've definitely copied me there. Just going back, though, to the color pictures and seeing that juxtaposition of what you were working on and that kind of anatomical full frontal thing, I wonder if, you know, the subliminal message or permission was there from what I saw, you know, going on in your work. Because it's, I know you took a number of those out, right? You told me you had lots of the color pictures in and then you took them out.
Well, only to make the number of pictures manageable. Mm-hmm. There are several in the exhibition upstairs.
Mm-hmm. But the really graphic ones, the really dirty ones, the ones that my art dealer was very uncomfortable with, that are not here, are very graphic. Like, you know, like,
yeah, and I think the whatever path I took to sort of back into making what are obviously figurative paintings in some sense, has always had to do with really wanting to show something about human bodies and to try to do that in a way that wasn't coy and that was direct and that still embodied my thinking about making paintings. Laurie's pictures of that time, in a way, were precursors to this series that we're looking at now, which were photographed using the Japanese life-size Japanese sex doll as a, or sex surrogate, I suppose, as a subject.
It's called a love doll in Japan, but I mean that's how it's presented.
This demure, innocent creature was actually created by evil Japanese people in a laboratory to trigger the most horrible parts of the male character.
See, that's so interesting because I could. That's something sitting up here I could never have said. You have to be.
But Laurie has completely recontextualized it, and I think, which is fascinating, and I'm serious about what a demure, innocent-looking creature this subject is, but that isn't where it came from. And yeah, in both cases, there's in the case of Laurie's work, it's kind of implicit in the knowledge of what the subject is and what its source is in so-called real life. And in the case of my work, it's something, you know, that's probably more apparent. It's a way of, as I say, it's a way of dealing with human bodies that's not coy, I hope. And it's meant to be sympathetic to people.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a weird crossing over of, there's a weird overlap that starts right around here, mm-hmm. with the kinds of things we were involved with as subjects that I really didn't even see it at the time. It's only in hindsight that I got it.
Yeah, I absolutely didn't see it at the time, and we live on a, we do our work in a pretty rural part of Connecticut. And at this time, I was taking the love doll. I didn't have an official studio. And the reason I was excited about finding a love doll was because if I had a life-size prop, it meant that the entire world around me could be my set rather than finding a doll and then finding a chair that scaled to the doll or the puppet or the dummy. Suddenly, my entire house was my studio. Plus, I didn't have a studio. We had this... this new house that was kind of empty, and I just thought I could move this doll around the bedroom, the living room, and use that as a set. And across the yard, there was this big funky barn building where these paintings were happening. And Carol would walk, you know, to the studio and then home for lunch and to the studio, and we would visit. But I never got any of the connections that seem like they're formally really there. And what I wanted to say before was that even though my subject matter seems, as Carol was saying, front and center, I do feel very much like a formalist and a colorist, and that's always been really important to me in what I do. And in fact, we've had arguments about who is a better... We both see ourselves as colorists, and one of our arguments is who's actually better at color. I am.
Well, I don't have any interesting ideas about color. I think for a while now, when I was younger and my work was less tied to subjects, I sort of went with the idea that all color is interesting and that the chromatic chords that were created by putting a lot of dissonant and jarring colors together, that was very beautiful to me. But since my work has been more clearly involved with representing things, you know, nameable subjects, it's become more like almost filling in a coloring book. And I would say that that's limited the scope of how I think about color, but it's also made me my understandings about it much more subtle. It's odd. I mean, I love this pairing of pictures. Laurie did a whole series of pictures putting that poor love doll underwater, which I think kind of ruined the mechanisms of the love doll. But not that there are no gears or anything in there, but it has articulated joints and things that got kind of messed up. But anyway, carrying this 60-pound piece of machinery around and putting it in a swimming pool is a very different sort of activity from what I do, which, as Laurie says, is work all morning, eat lunch, work all afternoon, do that day in and day out. Eventually, paintings happen. So one wouldn't know for a while that such overlapping concerns were even taking place.
Whoa, that's an interesting one, too. That's a photo. My photo is called The Jump. And, we had the love doll positioned. Actually, the bottom of the love doll was sitting on my... Thank God for the digital age, but the bottom of the love doll was sitting on my assistant's wife's head. And I had an assistant at the time who'd been one of my students who was, this is 2009 or 2010, who was fantastic, really skilled digitally. So we were able to Photoshop out everything and kind of clean up the photo, which is something I never could have done in the olden days of when I shot. If there was a string in the photo holding up an object, I would, if I could see it, I would reject it. But in the last photo, just to elaborate on, the love doll didn't sink, so we had one person kind of shoving it into the water like a bullet, just making it seem like it was diving. And what I was thinking while Carol was talking was that his life as an artist is much more like a job. And I'm out in the field. I get to go out and, you know, do things and play and have these adventures. And I've often felt like you're a little bit envious of that.
Yeah. I mean, I no, it's an interesting thing.
It's a real difference.
Think a lot about. I mean, I think that there's no playbook for being an artist in this day and age. And you have to kind of make up for yourself how you're going to do it. And so the fact that I spend the only way my work happens is basically if I'm alone in a room. And the way Laurie's work happens more and more is is in a kind of social space where she has people that help her, she has sources for material, there are labs that make the pictures. You know, there's a whole series, like an ecosystem, that Laurie's work arises out of.
And there's a shopping component that's really, really fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think you've managed to, however much I might carp about, you know, spending so much time alone and whatever, obviously it's what I chose.
Yeah.
I mean, it. No one put a gun to my head. So, and there are certainly plenty of examples of among our peers and other artists working today who have found a way to make paintings in a much more collaborative social space. So, and that's not me. So it's a little disingenuous for me to feel too jealous, but I'm very aware of the difference. I also benefit from the fact that Lori has people around who work for her who I get to see, so I'm not, you know, I don't go days on end without talking to other human beings, which I probably would if I were left to my own devices.
Yeah, I think you create the studio situation, the practice that you really want, that you really desire. And, you know, a couple images back, which is called 20 Pounds of Jewelry, where we just... how else would you get a chance to order 20 pounds of jewelry from eBay? You know, you see that as a lot being sold on eBay, and it's like, who would buy 20 pounds of random, you know, jewels? And so it's that kind of like those kind of adventures for me, like finding the love doll or finding a prop or knowing that I have to go out into the world for some sort of inspiration. That's how I have to work, so that I'm not locked into a studio all day, every day to finish what I have to do. But I think that, you know, I think for you and for a lot of painters, and most of our friends are artists and writers, and many of them are painters, but I think it's like the party's in there, you know, the party's in your mind. And what comes out is very shocking and surprising, and it makes me think that you're thinking about really a lot when it comes to your work. But for me as an artist, it seems like it just takes so long to get there. I would be so impatient.
Well, that's why I say it must suit me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am able to organize myself around long-term, you know, deferred gratification mm-hmm. type of goals. And I'd say for the last part of my life, most of the work that you're seeing in this in this PowerPoint, I tend to work over a spans of time like minimum of a year. I sort of know what I'm working on for that period of time. And right now there are a dozen paintings in my studio which are all kind of moving along at the same time, at the same rate. And they will, by the time they're done, I'm sure they will have taken me a year and a half. And I'm okay with that. I find it gives me a lot of time to understand what really interests me in the work and what seems trivial. Laurie's work is much more of a sort of phase of organization. Then there's an eruption where an enormous amount of stuff happens mm-hmm. very quickly. And, I mean, Laurie can make, I don't know, 100 pictures in a day once she's...
But it's 100 pictures of the same setup.
Yeah, right? But it's a hundred different things. You know, it's that's not a literal number. I'm just saying to
like
make the
it
point.
Didn't take a day to make 100 of the pictures in the show.
You didn't make all those pictures in one day.
No, but
no, of course.
You're just talking about the camera.
I'm trying to make the point that after a long period of organization, gestation, collaborative planning, a lot happens very quickly. Mm-hmm. In my case, it's almost the exact opposite, where I know the area that I'm operating in because I do a lot of drawing. They're not drawings in the sense of plans, but they're drawings that familiarize me with the area of where my interest lies. And then once I begin a group of paintings, I'm in there for
right,
a long time.
Right. And I'd like to just go back to my picture. I feel like for you, things are mapped out and then there aren't a lot of surprises. I mean, my observation is that you'll change a color, just say that sky just doesn't work and it needs to be another color. In the photo of the naked love doll, a couple of my friends were saying you have to shoot the love doll naked. And I said I didn't want to do it, but I finally decided to try it. So the love doll was kneeling on the floor, and I was shooting her, and I was extremely uncomfortable. And my mother was staying with us that summer with her apricot poodle. And her poodle wandered into the room, was the dining room at the time. All the rooms in our house, we changed their use. It's one of the things we do. The living room's been the dining room, and, you know, it's like... And at that time, I believe that room was the dining room, and the poodle wandered in, and suddenly the picture was the picture it needed to be, because it took the doll away from being this naked girl. It took it away from being a little bit gritty and seedy and perverse to just a young girl playing on the floor with her dog. So it was this amazing moment where I got a picture that I never anticipated getting. I mean, dogs have wandered into your paintings, but...
Yeah, the thing is, the dogs in Laurie's pictures are real. And the dogs in, the dogs in my paintings aren't, at least not in the same sense. I was really interested in this comparison because one of Laurie's lesser known projects from the last bit of time, which is well represented upstairs, are these photographs of male medical dummies that she made inspired by a contemporary opera called Two Boys. And around the same time she was working on that, I had embarked upon a group of paintings that were meant to be focused representations of a white-skinned human female in a bed of flowers, kind of, as you would say, zoomed in on, cropped rather tightly so that the center of her body was the main point of the painting, the main structural center of the painting. And there's something kind of equally creepy and confrontational about both of these things that interested me a lot when we were putting the PowerPoint together. And also, I think it made a big impression on me that Laurie was working with male subject matter, which is something that she's done from time to time. I mean, there was a period of time when the ventriloquist dummies were a big subject. But I had not yet understood that I was going to have to take that on if my use of human bodies as subject matter was going to be complete. I was going to have to account for maleness as well as femaleness, and in some way turn the focus back on myself. But the I was kind of flipped out that the red shape in the lower center of my painting and the mouth on this medical dummy are basically the same, which kind of kind of interesting. Nothing too profound to say about it, but there it is. So, Laurie, tell us a little bit about this subculture you were involved with when you started working on these photos, would you?
Well, after shooting the love doll for a couple of years and discovering it, I went to Tokyo to have a show and took one of our children, and actually it was one of our children who found a little poster and said, "Mom, look, that looks like a kind of doll you would like." And we ended up together in the love doll showroom which was a really sort of kind of terrible place. There were about between 50 and 100 love dolls, and there was a section where they were all dressed in little schoolgirl uniforms. And I was with my 17-year-old child, and the owner of the company. I had an interpreter, and I said, "Could you please tell him I'm just going to use them as a model in photographs?" And he insisted on demonstrating what they could do in front of our teenager. But despite, you know, then I had to order it, and you had to be, you couldn't order it unless you described every part, like what kind of nipple you wanted, what color hair, and down to every detail. You had to fill in every bit of the paper. So the Love Doll arrived, and I felt like it had been very satisfying and successful, so I decided I needed to look to Japanese culture for all my inspiration. So thank God for the internet and my preposterous relationship to the internet, because it's so easy to go down, as everyone here must know, it's so easy to go down the rabbit hole of whatever you're interested in. So my assistants and I were doing a lot of research, and we were looking at cosplay, and we discovered Kigurumi, which is this kind of cosplay where you make a mask, a persona, and you go out into the world. You wear a Zentai suit, which covers every bit of your body, so your fingers and your feet and your neck, everything has this kind of skin of lycra or almost like a latex over it, and you wear this mask, and that's your persona. So we found someone on the internet from Russia. We don't know if it's a male or a female. We never found out. We started ordering these masks. Every time we paid for one, we were afraid it would never arrive. But once the mask came, I started dressing people. Each person had their persona, their wig, whatever. And for me, it was like a doll had come alive. I mean, it was one of the most exciting things to work with this. It looked like a doll. It felt like a doll, but it was a human who could respond to my commands. I could say, turn to the left, turn to the right, sit down, stand up. It would talk back. So I always felt like if I'd found Kigurumi, like this character that existed in this, in the interstitial space between human and doll, I probably would have given up years ago. But I felt like I'd been looking for this my entire photographic life. So that's what these pictures are. They're the, you know, the cosplayers that came to my studio. And in this case, I found a little abandoned house in Connecticut. I mean, I knew it was on someone's property. It was like a little fur family house or something, and I could shoot there.
Or a crack house. I mean, yeah. Something.
It was pretty decimated. But it became a great backdrop.
And so while Lori and her assistants were having all this fun,
well, that's a good
I was
one. Wow.
Alone in my studio, slaving away over these paintings.
This is like Walt Disney on steroids. This is just like...
I had been very impressed by the photographs Lori took of the male medical dummies, as I said, and it certainly wasn't the only thing on my mind. But it was. It's interesting looking back to realize that they did make quite an impression on me. But I knew for a while that I'd wanted to turn my attention toward male bodies as the center of the work, and that the way to do that seems to be to start with myself. So just around the same time Lori was doing these pictures, I started messing around with drawings of a kind of, you know, doodle of what it would look like if you were naked looking down at your own body. And I made a series of paintings about that. And this one was one that seemed to have a weird kind of resonance with Laurie's mermaid subject. But I also, at the same time, was, you know, I can never really let go of some of the things that I see in my head that I want to try to make paintings about that are not so clearly subject-driven. And I liked pairing these two things because of the color.
But they don't match.
No, they don't match.
I mean, that's
there's a family, a strange sort of family of red resemblance that interested me, and that's such a freaky idea of a selfie, that thing of Laurie's, it's just an amazing image. Also, because they seem to share a kind of things being forced up against the imaginary picture plane.
I get it, and I like it, but I never would have paired those two together in a million years.
No, fortunately, you didn't have to.
Yeah.
Someone else did it. So.
So this is the work from my How We See series, which also followed the Kigurumi, and it was another. It also came from my obsession with, you know, Japanese culture, youth culture. I watched so many tutorials of young women painting anime eyes over their eyes, like how to do it tutorials. And what I really love about these pictures is that the idea of painting eyes over fake eyes over closed lids is not my idea, and that makes me love it more. And I made a number of these, and it's very poetically rich for me, the idea of closed eyes, that, you know, we see eyes, but can we really see? And also, it became very sort of representational of life online, life on the internet, well, contemporary life, when there are so many possibilities for changing your persona and changing yourself that often you don't know who you're really interacting with or talking to or what someone really looks like, or so much of people's reality and identity is done with this phone in one's hand.
What I was looking at these pictures again today, wandering around, and all of what you just said is very interesting and true, but none of it accounts for how, what I realized looking at those things, which I had never just put it in words to myself, was that no matter how clear you are with yourself about what you're looking at, I still can't get away from the feeling that the picture is of a woman who's staring at me. I cannot make that feeling go away. Which is an...
Well, when I shot it so that so I just told the model to move her head so that I was engaging with her eyes.
But I'm looking at a picture that's... All the information is there. It's a person with their eyes closed. At the scale of the prints, it's completely obvious that the eyes are painted. And I still feel as though I'm standing there and the person is staring back at me.
Well, do you feel like the Mona Lisa is looking at you? I mean, it's a painting. It's just part of a painting.
Yes, but that's a collision of codes that's not typical or...
Right.
And in some way not really comfortable. I mean, it's not the same to me as looking at a painting of a face where a person is represented as looking out at the rest of us, because you know what that is. You know it's all painted. And it's one code. It's continuous. This is a kind of collision of... And the idea that, I don't know how, we don't talk about this that much, but the fact that at this point Laurie's work enters a phase where painting is a very real part of bringing the pictures into being. And by the same token, I've started to get interested in what an idea of portraiture might mean within the vocabulary that I'm making up.
That's a really interesting pair. I mean, that gets dangerously close.
We'll just keep moving.
Okay. I mean, an interesting, side note, kind of just personal history fact is that when I first saw these paintings that Carol made of looking, a male looking down at his own body, I was very clear about my discomfort. Like to the point where, if I'd come in the studio, he would say, "You don't like these, right?" And I would say, "Well, I don't know. I don't. Well, yes, I don't like them." And that was sort of an interesting phase. I like them. I like them now. I like them much more. But my discomfort didn't make you turn away from your subject matter in any way, shape, or form.
No, But that wouldn't be very good if it did. I mean, you know, I've always shown Lori my work, and I've always shown my kids my work when they were growing up. During the time I was making all those, that series of paintings called Bathers, all the paintings of naked women in the water and in nature, I gave, periodically would give talks at art schools or at places like this. And there was always a question about basically the implication that it wasn't even implied. The premise of the question was, this stuff is really offensive. This is exploitative of women. You know, this seems like it comes from a really misogynistic place. Now, if I had felt that the people that I'm close to in my life, all of whom are female, if I had felt that they felt that way, I think I really would not have continued to make those paintings. I never felt that. When I realized that Lori was, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I would say profoundly turned off by the direction that this was going, it was a new feeling for me. It wasn't a feeling I particularly liked, but I also knew that I had to kind of plow on through. I mean, that my work was calling for this, and that really my work was insisting upon this, and that it needed to be followed through. But it wasn't I've experienced Lori's disinterest, but I had never really experienced her I don't know what the right word is. It was just, you just didn't like looking at those things. And it was very clear. This is our best juxtaposition of the night, so enjoy it. I periodically get involved with very large when I say ambitious, I don't mean that as a value judgment, just as a literal description, you know, things that are complicated, big, and take a long time. And this painting is one such, which I worked on over the last few years. And it happened to coincide quite closely with when Lori was developing the ideas for this enormous picture that's up at the top of the stairs. And it's interesting to look at chromatically, the two of them together.
Well, you definitely made that painting before I made that photograph. So.
Yeah, I can't remember. I mean, I don't remember. I don't actually know if that's true, if you say so. But they were both finished in the same year.
It's funny how seeing this presentation, you're sort of very childlike, competitive, immature. Well, I did it first, feelings come out.
Well, especially since it's not at all clear what it even
is.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, it really is like what they say about kids at a certain stage of their development doing parallel play. Mm-hmm. And periodically they might stumble into the same game for 5 minutes and then they kind of stumble back out and keep doing whatever they were doing. It's a lot like that. The fact that we both work in a relatively isolated situation maybe makes these relationships seem stronger, because we don't, you know, when we were younger and we lived in New York and we would, it was a frequent common occurrence to visit other artists' studios, have other artists come over, see tons of things in art galleries, and that isn't really the way our life goes now. Except periodically, like we spend a lot of time just in a very rural setting doing what we do. So we're the only artist each other sees.
I wanted to go back for a minute just because I wanted to... Okay. I just wanted to say that this is Hannah, a trans woman, a young friend of mine who's newly trans, and her clothes are painted on by a body painter. And this is our oldest daughter, and her full set of clothes are painted on as well.
Ditto that sweater.
Ditto that sweater. So this is where How We See went to this kind of body painting, this kind of trompe l'oeil painting on clothes. And there have been a number. There have been two trans women in the photos. Three, actually, in How We See and some new.
And it's interesting. I mean, I, as probably is obvious, I don't have models. I don't, have a guy I call who comes and lies naked on his stomach so that I can... I just make this stuff up out of extremely simple components. But Lori really has models. I mean, I know this woman quite well. She's a friend of our kids. And the day that she came to be photographed in our apartment in New York, I was around, sort of in and out. There were all these makeup artists and Hayden was running around with no shirt on and these people were painting a cable knit sweater on her body. And I mean, it's kind of amazing to be around, and it's a really fun thing to see. But it was when I was watching the makeup artist try to figure out how to paint a cable knit sweater on human skin, I think was when it really struck me how powerful the painting component of this has gotten. And which is a photograph of our younger kid, that entire thing is not real. You know, it's all illusion.
And we copied a photo of Rudolph Valentino. That was the source photo. But I think that one of the things that's been exciting for me about the new work is, like, I've always... we're both artists through and through, but I've always secretly felt like painters were true artists, that somehow photo-based artists and conceptual, like, we're all fraudulent in a way. So now I have this opportunity to invite a painter into my pictures. So this is making them be very... Now my pictures are getting really legitimate, you know?
And that painting, that image on the of mine is a... very large, tall painting. It's about the same size as the painting here at the museum of the woman on the horse, but which was a kind of the end piece of a group of paintings I made based on the idea of of men wrestling, and there was no real story to it, but
it's one of your more tender works.
The denouement of that whole situation. Mm-hmm. So
I think that's our last image, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions? This guy has a question.
Carol, I've always wondered about the genitalia in your work. I first came across your work with Prince at Yulee. And where did that come from inside of you in your development?
It's just there. I don't know. I mean, I actually don't know how to answer the question because it's so... to me, it's so obviously just a part of what everyone deals with, or not. And as I said earlier, I knew for a while that I wanted to work with images of human bodies and that I wanted to do it in a way that was sympathetic but not coy or dishonest. So... I suppose there's that. Interesting stuff to draw, You know, there's that. I don't know.
I think you just give your unconscious free rein. I think you have like a very psychoanalytic relationship to your subject, which is, if I think it up, that's okay. Then it's real. You know, like there are no, I don't think that there are any governors on your fantasy life when it comes to your work. I don't know about your regular fantasy life.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a thing that I don't quarrel with that, but I'm not really sure that I don't, it's not for me to agree or disagree. I don't think about it in terms of my unconscious or my subconscious, because I'm very conscious of my own genitalia, and so is everybody in this room. You know,
of yours or their own? I mean,
no, but I mean, that's what I mean. It's like, that's why I really, the reason I felt comfortable making the paintings I made of women is because I have a mother. Every human alive has a mother. There is a thing there that we all share. We all came here through the same doorway. So that can't be unconscious unless you're a complete thoughtless idiot. And likewise, male bodies, you know, it's an uncomfortable, culturally uncomfortable representation, and something that seems to bring up all sorts of controversy when it occurs in a really blunt way. But I kind of feel like, you know, these aren't men, these are paintings, they're drawings, they're black lines and bright colors, and I can do this because that's what they are. You know, I'm not, it's not, you know, Robert Mapplethorpe photographing somebody getting fist fucked. I mean, that's, you know, okay, that's controversial. This, I don't know, it seems less controversial than what I see on the sides of buses in New York every day, you know?
I'm really struck with both of your work, that there seems to be the thing that you present that we all see first. And then if there is all of the other information that keeps us there. And if the viewer ever gets past what that thing that brought them there initially, you begin to see how brilliantly composed both of your images are. Both of you work this way. So I'd like for you to maybe address some of those decisions you make. You know, for Carol, for your work, I see you solving the problem of a painting every time. Like that seems to be, but you're doing it with some kind of provocative imagery. And then Lori, with you, it's a little bit like, I think, is it Bard or who was it that said that it is, you know, the photograph is just the subject. It's not the material, it's not how it's made. But there are so many decisions that you're making and information you're giving us. I hadn't seen it. I can't believe it. And the love doll with the poodle or the little dog. No, was it that one? It's the one with the incredible shadow. Did everybody see that tonight?
Yes. Yeah. So shadows happen a lot, and I use shadows a lot.
And the glowing form over here. Well, can you talk a little bit about sort of those vital components that you're totally conscious of, but you know are kind of going to reveal themselves to the viewer slowly?
Well, I think that I'm a formalist, and I there was a photographer that I just revered. She's no longer alive, Jan Gruber, and she was one of the first, you know, first photographers I had a big like photo crush on, and she did all kinds of things, you know, very conceptual work, and then she suddenly switched to doing like kitchen utensils and portraits. And I remember this quote from her where she said, "Formalism is everything." And I've always thought that I find my subject matter it gets me there, and I think this is now true of you too, but it's an armature, it's a structure on for me to hang all of my interest in composition and color and structure. And, you know, just because I say I need to photograph a doll doing X, Y, or Z, the picture has to work, and that's it has to work on so many visual levels. And, you know, I think that I've learned a lot from snapshots, but I've also learned a lot from the history of painting, and I think it all comes to bear. So any of those things that you see, if you're looking, that you discover in one of my photographs, they're really thrilling to me because I'm really aware of what's there. And you'd probably say the kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, I think that a lot of the language for talking about this is inadequate. There's a thing we think we mean by formalism that doesn't sound very lively or very meaningful anymore. Subject matter is much easier to talk about, and we're in a period historically right now where discussion around art seems to be extremely driven by discussion about subject matter and meaning and all. And that's fine. I mean, these things go, you know, you can find people talking about formalism in the 19th century, too. But it's just as Laurie says, it all has to happen in order for anything to really be interesting.
And not to say that, you know, I've said this a number of times, and forgive me if I've said it here, but for me to let a picture out, it has to exist on three P's, and I'm sure I'll forget one, psychological, political, and personal. And it has to pass all those tests, and then the formal stuff too. So the meaning is really important, and where it sits culturally, all that stuff's really important. But in the end, I'm a visual artist, we're image makers, and if it doesn't look good, it's not going anywhere, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and even with you can have whatever, awesome politics, great values, and not make something that just doesn't come off.
It's just not right.
You know, so it's complicated.
Anyway, there was a question I just...
Have you ever created work together, or think that you will create images together, or maybe what you've created?
We did one time.
Yeah, we should do it again.
We did one time, and we both kind of thought it was going to be more of a project than it ended up being. We made one photograph. Laurie took a photograph of some small figures that were in a set that was made of shapes I had cut out of paper and drawn on.
And, yeah, we like it a lot. It became a really great wedding present to give people a little. But no, we've never.
But I don't think it was for lack of. I don't think we did that and then thought, oh, never, you know, never doing that again. It was more just somehow at that point it didn't get traction in our mutual brains. But it's. I don't know. I have funny feelings about the whole idea of artists collaborating. I mean, I'm never quite sure what it means, because my idea about thinking about an artist's work is so much about understanding it as a product of one consciousness having some kind of experience that's translated into matter, you know? So when it becomes two consciousnesses interacting, it becomes strange. Not to say that there aren't some collaborative teams in contemporary art that make really interesting mm-hmm. work.
But I don't think you like the whole idea of artists, you know, you're not invested in the idea of artists coupledom. So what's happening here tonight? Never again. At least 10 years. You'll never see it again.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Whatever you say. Any other questions? Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks.